with Steve Bick.
And off.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, a very good Monday, race fan. Sirius 162, XM 207, Sports Zone 999, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com, and for, gosh, I started coming in 2000, for broadcast, started coming in 2006, so it's the 150th Derby. It's not the 150th Derby for me, but I got to add them up, I guess. Happy as always to be at Churchill and for more than the next 2 weeks, because we, starting last year, stay past Derby, because on to Nashville we go for the Iroquois. So for the next at least 12 broadcasts, we will be coming to you live from Churchill. Plenty of Derby news and everything else that's gone on. There's a lot of Oaks news, too, as it happens. And we'll get to all of that. I've got, in fact, a busy first hour, because James Scully is sitting in already. Scully's had a busy morning. He was on the Derby Work Show. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. This will be my third.
There we go. Try that again.
Good morning, Steve. This will be my 37th Derby, first day here for the works this morning. And, yeah, we definitely saw a, I think, a major contender for the Kentucky Oaks out there on the track, just FYI, have a breeze after breezing last week at Churchill Downs. I thought it was much more serious move, and I really liked it. I liked the way she looked out there. I think she was galloping out really well, and they caught her going a mile. You know, you don't see too many mile gallops out like that. And saw first time on the track this morning, Sierra Leone. We're going to get the chance to see Fierceness tomorrow on the track. He arrived late last night. So, this is a good time to finally get a chance to see how all the horses are doing over the track. I mean, just watching, like, Sierra Leone, he's in a nice slow gallop. But, boy, that you just going around the turns, that's where you really notice that long stride, in my mind, watching him gallop out around that first turn. It's cool watching him move.
Well, and you talk about just FYI, that was a significant significant and closely watched effort, because her first work that came with Stablemate Resilience for Bill Mott,
she was all crazy.
Yeah, she was either, you know, the building, or, you know, being in a new environment. She was much more settled and much more focused, and so a nice leveling off of her experience leading up to the Oaks a week from Friday, and, you know, second off the layoff. There's a lot to like.
She got caught wide off the turn. You know, she's about five wide with Candy six wide. So I mean, that wasn't a place to be in the Ashland. I thought that was a very solid comeback effort. And then we also have that Oaks development with the Pletcher filly, potentially.
Well, you got more than that, too, because in addition to, you're talking about Manama Gold.
Yes.
This is the Louisiana bred that found herself in Dubai winning the UAE Oaks. And Pletcher's had her apparently for a fair amount of time at Palm Beach Downs. And there is serious consideration of supplementing. She'd have to be supplemented,
right,
and running her in the Oaks. Now, in addition, we also have got a development that is happening this morning, and KK would most likely, I don't know if he's going to come back over. He's out watching
Resilience.
Resilience is working, right, as we speak, for those of you that that are keeping an eye on that action. But the storyline that is going to come out, if it hasn't already, if we go back to regulatory risks placement in the Gazelle,
Right.
And the immediate reaction of regulatory risk, the obvious connections of Chad and Seth Klarman,
yeah.
Right, Ways and Means. And at the time, they immediately said, well, we won't run her because if we drop out, that gets Ways and Means in.
Right. At the time, Ways and Means was like 16th, so she needed two defections.
Yeah.
And, yeah, regulatory risk, which everybody just thought, no way she'll run in front of her stablemate.
Well, she's now running.
Now she's running because Ways and Means is 13th on the, or 12th or 13th, and she's safely in.
Well, and so we will watch what happens there. You, of course, and KK might have further pieces of news, including they apparently, with Manyama Gold, they want to watch her work by either tomorrow or Wednesday, and then they'll make a decision if they're going to go ahead and bring
supplement
her here.
Yeah.
There was also... I don't know if you guys had the specifics of it. Before we talk about Grandmo the First, right at the beginning of the training session, there was a Pletcher, essentially what looked like a workbait, unless it was somebody else that is on the border that was out there. Did not have a, I don't think had the workmate, didn't have a workmate cloth. That pitched the rider. Did you see this?
I did not see it, no.
Pitched the rider who was and was bucking and was very fortunate that the horse did not get loose. The exercise rider was able to hang on to the reins, and ultimately the horse settled. That was that when if you saw when Encino broke off
right.
and jumped,
yeah,
he was jumping the indentation of where that horse had fallen.
Oh, okay.
And the horse was fine. They called for the outrider. By the time the outrider got there, the horse had the jock had gotten back aboard and went and started to gallop. But it was a wacky incident. Mm-hmm. I actually have the tail end of it on my phone, but I wanted to get specifics about who was involved. But that when Encino then broke off to gallop, and Encino looks very good.
He looks outstanding. And the thing about him is he's sort of still on the fence, but it feels like to me he's 100% going to run, and he's 100% going to be involved in the pace. I mean, he's just fast, and he's on the muscle right now, and I think he's going to send. And, you know, these trainers like Brad Cox and even Pletcher, they won't ever talk about it, but we saw it last year. They both got, like, deep closers that are top contenders and Tapa Trice and Angel Vampire, and they're verifying. They weren't talking verifying and King's Barn being sacrificial lambs at any point in time, but that's exactly what happened with them. And I just see Encino, he is going to be ripping and rolling. Now, he is his dam is a half sister to Street Sense, and he's a fantastic athletic looking colt and could be really, really good. And he could maybe win the race, I mean, run an effective race on the front end. But I think any doubts about what his strategy will be. You know, it's going to be influenced by the fact that Catching Freedom is going to be closing from like 17th or 18th, and Encino would be hustling hard in my mind in the field.
You mentioned Brad Cox, and of course, Saturday was the busy, more busy of the two mornings over the weekend. Yesterday, very limited, just Steve Asmussen with Track Phantom and Our Pretty Woman. And then actually a very interesting flourish by Where's My Ring for Val Brinkerhoff,
right?
Who had just a little quarter mile, you know, kind of a.
I mean, she's
a
intriguing. What a compelling a race! I mean, I look at Our Pretty Woman now that with this, she's now going to be a one spot out if this Pletcher Philly supplements, but. She's speed in the race, and there's not a lot of pace in that Oaks. That's the one thing. I look at that race, I can identify seven or eight serious win contenders, but I wonder a little bit about how fast they'll be going and how it'll be shaping up.
Now, I can tell you there's a lot of people who have exactly one win contender, and that's Ways and Means. It'll be interesting
to see what her odds are. I think she's going to be the second choice in the betting behind Leslie's Rose. I think she's a real buzz horse, obviously. I think she also, you know, she's going to need to get a mile and an eighth distance in the second start off the shelf. I just think, yeah, the pedigree, yeah, no problem. You know, maybe she, maybe whatever, maybe she can just build to get it or whatever. But she was very, very fast last year, and I just worry about her like having everything go right or needing everything to go right for her to like really thrive going on for a long second off the shelf.
It's interesting actually that Chad would have two horses like this that'll be contending for favoritism or at worst second choice,
right,
when you think about Ways and Means in Sierra Leone. And in fact, I've got a very funny thing that we've got to work on this week, and you'll appreciate it. As I was driving on Friday, Chuck Simon and I were going back and forth about different ideas, and you know, I asked him, I said, wouldn't you think that the Derby Oaks would have the kind of prop bets that the Super Bowl has? And so we're going to, you're included, we're going to reach out to, you know, a wide array of pundits and ask for one idea for a prop bet. Like for instance, will, and these could be either a yes, no's, or they could have odds. A Chad Brown Oaks Derby double, a Kenny McPeak Oaks Derby double, a Brad Cox Oaks Derby double, et cetera.
Right.
Those kinds of things. A Chad Brown Derby exacta, domestic product, and you know, those kinds of things.
Right.
I thought there was one interesting prop bet that you could come up with Cox,
Brown,
and Gargan.
Mm-hmm.
That the longer price of each of them finish ahead of the lower price. That domestic product finish ahead of Sierra Leone. That Society Man finish ahead of Dornick. Mm-hmm. And that Encino finishes ahead of Just a Touch or Catching Freedom. Things like that.
Right.
I mean, just, we certainly have got the landscape for it.
You could do like a little thing like that with Just a Touch and Just Steel being the Justifies too.
You know?
Yeah.
There's the point is there are so many alternative and fun ways to get people to think about the race and to consider, you know, other. Mm-hmm. You know, Pat Cummings did a thing like this. Did those prop. Contest a couple of years ago, had a lot of fun.
One of my big takeaways after last year's Derby was this pace is just gotten crazy for two straight years. And it's funny because when Orb ran in 2013, that was the first year of the points. You had Palace Malice run off, so they had this crazy pace, set it up for deep closers. But in the wake of that, Chrome, Pharaoh, Nyquist, Always Dreaming, Justify, you had six straight winners that were all up close to the pace, and the pace was moderate, and there was really a lot of people out there saying because of the point system, you'll never have these suicidal paces because you won't have this cheap speed. You won't have these sprinter types running in the Derby anymore, and these like crazy, crazy paces are a thing of the past. And now we're sitting here two straight years with just insane pace early setups, and we're expecting it again this year. I mean, we're a far cry from Dullahan in 2011 going 113-2 on the lead in the Derby. Those days are just seem so far gone.
Well, and you think about a race like Orbs, whenever there's been when there's a wet track, you also get the circumstance where the kickback, the splosh, it will essentially spread the field out.
Right.
And it's also a scenario where, and who else? Always Dreaming was a
Always
wet track.
Dream, yeah.
When you have when that
Justify.
Scenario, when you have that scenario, it's easier for a horse when the horses are spread out,
right,
20 lengths up.
Think about Mage last year on the turn. Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit spread out, and he was rolling by. I mean, these closers are making up so much ground on a far turn that. You know, they don't make as much of ground up in the stretch as they do on that turn. That's where all the real running goes.
Well, and that's, you know, the Derby move, quote unquote.
Right.
You know, and of course that also, you know, reaching contention, being in the top four at the eighth pole, is a long-standing.
Right.
Maxim, John.
That's why I look at a horse like Track Phantom. I mean, I've seen enough Battle of Midways and these Mauer types that have gotten that position and held for a top three placing. I look at Track Phantom. He ran his final 3/8 in the Louisiana Derby in 37 and change. He's not coming home slowly. He's just coming home slower than really fast horses in Sierra Leone and Catching Freedom. And to me, those races are better than people are giving him credit for. Now, maybe he didn't get the 10 furlong distance and is up the track, but he's the kind of horse to me. You're not telling me he could be first, second, third, or fourth turning for home Track Phantom, and they're trying to get him to relax and finish up better. I mean, he's going to wear blinkers, but he's got so much natural speed, he's still going to be forward.
Well, yesterday,
and I think he's a dangerous long shot because of that.
There's no doubt. He is the. If for those of you that play fantasy sports, he is a post hype candidate here.
Right.
A horse that came into the new year and came into the 3-year-old season as, you know, the major, you know, the one of the with Waiting for Fierceness, and then of course Fierceness, you know, stubs his toe in the Holy Bull, and you know, we had to wait another 6 weeks, 8 weeks to see what was going to happen there. But Track Phantom was part of the, you know, the elite candidates, early in January.
Right.
And then the assumption or the conclusion after the Risen Star in the Louisiana Derby that, the races are getting longer and he doesn't want to go that far. If you go back to the LeCompte conversation with Steve Asmussen, mm-hmm. he made it very clear that this was a work in progress. This was a horse that was going to run in every prep, with the Derby being the only major goal. It might have been nice to win a Grade II Louisiana Derby and whatnot. If you saw that work yesterday, Mike Welch will be with us.
I thought it was brilliant. 34 and change.
He was terrific yesterday.
Coming home,
sitting. He at a certain
didn't even really start picking it up until deep stretch. Now Ferrant gave. Tower gave him a little like hand thing, but once he did that, he really like found another gear.
Exactly. He sat comfortably, a length and change off, and was just moving very, very comfortably, and finished up very nicely. And those that want to believe in Track Phantom, you've got every reason to remain loyal and confident. There's no worse feeling when it comes to Derby betting than a horse, let's say like this, who, you know, people were all in front of and then backed off and watch as they, you know, watch as they win it.
And I'll tell you, I mean, Quality Road, I mean, he's thrown like Oaks winners, right? But a lot of people think like you get up to a mile and an eighth and that's like the limit of his effectiveness. But I think it is good for him that he finally got a Triple Crown race winner last year, a National Treasure. And, you know, sometimes you'll see these kind of things. Like, I mean, I'm not too worried about the distance with him. It's more like if he's good enough. Oh, Resilience, 101-3.
Yeah.
The filly goes 59 and change, and he goes 101-3.
Well, and she needed
I thought it was I thought she looked fantastic.
Mike, as I mentioned, Mike Welch will join us. You had over the weekend, and I'll catch up now on the on what transpired in terms of getting Grand Mo the First into the field. But Catching Freedom in Just a Touch on Saturday, Dornick and Society Man, Endlessly, who continues to be a source of endless debate about
endless encouragement on the dirt. he was laboring, wasn't he?
That's a fair word for it.
Yeah.
And if you listen to Michael McCarthy, he's made his feelings known. He's also acknowledged
what he's seen
it's
here.
Not his just, it's is not exact, only his decision.
Yeah,
it's
I'm
not
sorry
just his decision.
You.
That's all right.
Yeah, what he's seen here, I think, is what he saw last year when he talked about he considered running him on dirt last year, and they trained him on the surface. He decided not to, and I think there's a reason for that. It will be, he would be a horse that would Yeah, I look at Grandmo the first. I think, you know, he is a little bit intriguing because, like, unlike Catalytic, who's like second in that Florida Derby, all because of positioning, at least he had to outfinish the Shug Horse for third. You know, he's by Uncle Mo. He's out of a Giants Causeway mare. And, you know, he's just starting to run his best races right now. Now, granted, both of them weren't fast, running third in the Tampa and third in the Florida Derby. But to me, he's moving forward, and he's got a way better chance than horses like Catalytic and Society Man of, like, perhaps even getting a very, very small minor award.
I might debate that when the time comes, but I should mention, you know, Grand Mo the First got in due to the unfortunate injury that post-workout of...
Deterministic?
I'm sorry.
He didn't get hurt.
No,
yeah.
Not
he
hurt.
Breezed him,
not,
but yeah.
No, I'm thinking of, I'm one pass behind. Deterministic officially bypassing Derby for either Peter Pan or Preakness.
Oh, you're talking about No More Time.
No More Time.
Yeah, the Condylar issue in Florida.
But,
yeah.
Deterministic's decision yesterday, which was more or less, I think, anticipated.
Yeah. And so, he even breezed him. And then declared
it
from the
Derby.
Yeah, that's
what he was kind of waiting for it. So that gets that got Grand Mo the First in, Victor Barboza, and Jaramillo will ride. Mm-hmm. Now, the assumption became that Common Defense would then be next in. This is the McPeak, and that this morning also came up that Common Defense will not
ride.
Make it.
Right.
So that now puts Epic Ride and Hades sitting at 21.
Hades isn't coming, though.
That, officially now.
Official,
so that means
no.
Epic Ride, that would get us to Epic Ride and Uncle Heavy.
Yeah, Uncle Ride and Uncle Heavy. Epic Ride and Uncle Heavy, they're both going to run the way I understand it if they can get in. And then right behind them, another horse that will 100% run if he could get in. It seemed like an impossibility when he ran fourth in the Jeff Ruby, but Lucas sees the gray. If Common Defense comes out, he would, I think, and Hades comes out officially, which he already did, would be 23rd.
And KK was going to swing by after the...
you know,
workout by Resilience.
Yeah.
So I just want to see if he.
What did you think about Just Steele's move Saturday? That 5 furlong odd thing. I didn't like that too much. I don't know. I just seemed like it wasn't what they had planned, and I don't know. It just I question whether that that getting all that company, and then it didn't look like it looked like the workmate was almost going better than him. Like right late in the work. I mean, I don't know. I'm just like a little bit.
I should go back actually and watch. I basically was watching it in the car, mm-hmm. and all of these are on tape at all of the YouTube and at KentuckyDerby.com, Catching Freedom and Just a Touch. We'll get Mike's read. The rest of those workers, by the way, you mentioned Lucas Justice Steele, who officially worked a full mile.
Yeah. And that's a throwback move. You know, he did that with Will Take Charge. He worked him a mile. He drilled Oxbow a half mile and then sent Will Take Charge out for a slow, like, mile move. So he's not afraid to mix it up. He's never going to do the same thing. You know, I like that about Lucas.
Well, and boy, if they talk about Oxbow. Oxbow, for those of us that were here for any period of time, Oxbow literally was coming out daily and dragging himself around the track.
He actually ran the best of any horses with speed because he's like sixth early, and then the top eight. He's the only runner in the top eight at the half mile pole that was in the top 10 at the wire.
Correct.
And he ran sixth, and that was that Palace Malice ludicrous like speed pace duel that killed all the other speed. Oxbow ran a race like two fills last year. Very, I thought, commendable and courageous in defeat because you at least withstood all that pace and still had something.
Well, and then, of course, turned around, you know, 2 weeks later and wins the Preakness with Gary Stevens, who was off of the 5-year layoff.
The knee injury.
Which was one of the great stories in recent memory. Mystic Dan For McPeak, worked. He's a high energy horse. He was out this morning, yeah. And I saw that he was really anxious to do more. And that's 48 hours removed from having just worked.
I think he's a vertical exotic contender. I think if you're looking at Trials and Supers, you got to consider him. I think his form really moved forward when he switched from running being forward to stalking tactics in the Southwest. Heck, he looked like a front running sprinter early in his career to me, and now, you know, he's become more of a distance, you know, now he can, you know, he's run two solid races at a route where he's stalking in mid-pack, and I think that's moved him forward, and he's training well, it appears to be. I mean, McPeak couldn't have been any more bullish, though, with Torpedo Anna.
Well, that I was going to bring up next, because yeah. She was terrific.
Yeah, she was terrific, and she loves this track. And that race from an outside post off the layoff in the fantasy, yeah, you could question the competition perhaps, but
who cares?
I mean, she's four or five wide every step of the way, and then she just drew off effortlessly at the top of the stretch. I thought West Omaha kept trying hard to the wire. She just ran into a freaking monster that day.
And she is obviously, we'll start to talk about prices as the week and as the draw gets closer. But with Tarifa,
she's coming down.
Well, still, but even if she does, she's not going to be a shorter price than Tarifa, Leslie's Rose, yeah. Ways and Means.
I think Leslie's Rose will be the morning line favorite, and then Ways and Means could be a little. We'll see how much buzz she gets, but she's hard for me to gauge how much she's going to take a lot of money. Ways and Means, it's like that with Fierceness in Sierra Leone. I mean, I could see him really being close in the wagering, but come on. I mean, Fierceness, these numbers players are going to come in on him. He is the best numbers horse in the field. He's the going to be favored, and Sierra Leone's going to be the second choice.
Well, and back to the girls, and I mean, even under any circumstance, Torpedo Anna is not going to be better than fifth choice.
No, she's not. I mean, and
she's got to be 8-1.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, you're still going to have, for sure, Leslie's Rose, Ways and Means, and Just FYI.
And Tarifa.
And then Tarifa. Yeah, for sure.
Those four have got to be lower prices.
They got to be. I know Tarifa doesn't get that much respect, and I think there's a belief that the three-year-old fillies weren't as strong at Fairgrounds this winter as they were in the past, but I'd say her most impressive race is two starts back in the Rachel Alexander. She got caught behind horses in upper stretch. She altered path without losing any momentum and kept finishing up, like, strongly. I thought that athletic, that nimbleness will serve her well moving forward. So I still think that her next-to-last prep is her best race.
The other names from the weekend, Jinjin, Tarifa, and Impel all worked as well for Cox.
Yeah, Impel, man. I mean, she would be a contender. She could get in. No doubt. She's like five or six out now.
Yeah, she's in terrible trouble with these two considerations, with regulatory risk coming back in.
Yeah.
And
Moomba Girl
and
Manama Gold. Gold, yeah. Overcharge's sister. That's what I was calling her.
That's right. Into Champagne worked. Lemon Muffin for Lucas as well.
Is Indem Champagne 100% in? I thought he was considering shorter distances with them at one point with her.
Let's ask Ian and Tracy what is going on.
I know that at one point he wasn't 100% sure because he thought she might appreciate like less than 9 furlongs, but you know, it's hard to turn it down if you're in the race.
Well, we will find out. I did not.
I mean, I hadn't heard anything lately. I just was just making sure about that. She was one that was on the fence potentially about a week ago, and just had never heard any update.
All right. I will quick note to Ian Wills. Let's get a couple of things in here, too, James, while James is with us. James Scully joining us. And first and foremost, the LSFP, the last second Friday push, with an absolute big score. That was fabulous. Fortune's nephew, a $20, $22 winner.
$22 winner with that Ruiz, that kid in there. Yeah.
Who apparently is still under consideration to ride Society Man.
Is he?
I think so. Awesome. I think.
Well, I think Luis Rivera was on him before.
Rivera is who I'm thinking of. Yeah. You're right.
And he actually really gave him a good ride. He got him in the perfect spot. I like that ride on by
That's
Rivera.
Right.
I would stay with Rivera, and I would, you know, I mean, I wouldn't take. I don't know about Leperu with West Saratoga, but all these jocks. I mean, like Frezu. He gets the most out of Stronghold. You know, Ben Curtis, I'm excited to see him in the Derby with Honor Marie. I thought Honor Marie looked good on the track today.
Yes, he did, and it continues to be, you know. I
like seeing that because he's such a deep closer. You know, he's been last or next to last at a point of call in every single start, and when I see a deep closer like that really on the muscle and under restraint like he was, I think that's a good sign.
They've also got his head cocked so that he doesn't take off. It would gives you another indication that he's ready to take flight, but he's got a controlled, you know, there's a controlled energy to him. Mm-hmm. I do not think of him, and I've tried to make the case that he is not necessarily the deepest of late runners. I think he's got some tactical foot that can place him. Maybe I don't know, 12th, 13th, 14th. I don't think he's got to drop out of it and come with one run.
It's the same thing with Catching Freedom. I mean, he definitely probably doesn't want to be last like he was in the Louisiana Derby. The one thing they're facing a little bit of is like there's, you know, you could pass, you know, there's a bunch of stalkers in the race. You know, there's a bunch of presser stalker types. I mean, I look at Catching Freedom, Endlessly, Honor Marie, Sierra Leone. I mean, those are those four horses have shown a dynamic late kick in their last start. And I mean, they're going to have to change run styles and they're going to, you know, there's a chance they won't because, you know, I do think if depending on, you know, especially if you get a fast track, I do think you don't necessarily have to be that far back. I mean, you can be within 10 lengths of the lead and be 15th or 16th early. So, you know, it's more a matter of how much work they got to do than, you know, not necessarily their positioning to me.
Let me get a couple of things in, and Rich Migliori is going to join us at 10. A couple of weekend notes, James, as well, hence the reference to the terrific Friday opinion. Safi Joseph's going to join us in about 10 minutes.
Okay.
On the heels of Skippy Longstocking's absolutely
right.
powerful performance in the Oaklawn Handicap.
Peaking right now.
Well, and
back-to-back races. The Challenger was real good. That was that wasn't a very good field, but he looked good. But that race on Saturday was outstanding. You know, we've got this West Saratoga is by Exaggerator, and I was doing a little bit of work on him. I was like, does he have another graded stakes winner? I'd forgotten all about the Skippy Longstocking, but he's been terrific.
Well, I wrote a fairly, along with the buyers from Saturday, I had to write a bit of an appreciation for this horse. He was and we'll go over this with Safi, but a $37,000 purchase, Daniel Alonzo, an OBS April purchase. He made five starts at two, nine starts at three, six starts at four, already three starts this year. He's never been, the longest layoff line he's got was 90 days. Otherwise, essentially he's been in training nonstop since he was two.
He was eased in a race earlier this year.
The Pegasus thing was kind of weird.
I know he got all out on that first turn and messed him up being on that outside post. Yeah.
Other than that, he's never really run a bad race.
Right.
He's now won six graded stakes. He's multiple grade one placed as well, and his wins have come at six different tracks with five different jocks.
He ran good at a mile and a half in the Belmont to be third, didn't he? Was he third in that race?
He was, that's one of his grade one places,
along
with the Breeders' Cup mile behind,
Cody's Wish, and National Treasure was second.
That's right. He's also, if you look, I mean, just using buyers even, he just has improved steadily and has never really gone out of form.
He had that race wrapped up on midway on the far turn. I'm watching that Oakland handicap, and as soon as and he had this like stablemate was setting the pace, and he's just totally relaxed behind this long shot stablemate. And at the top of the stretch, I mean, the race was over. Nobody ever had a prayer in that race. I mean, Red Rail won, and I forget who ran second, but they were just belated, never a threat.
This the career best 107 buyer, Ian Wilkes saying, "What do you think?" Of course, she's running. I think.
So this idiot Scully told that said he thought she might be doubtful. That's what you should have said.
That was funny. No, I wouldn't say that. That's so funny. Yeah, no. Why wouldn't? Why? I guess. Well, why wouldn't you run?
Right.
Let me.
Well, she did. Like it looked like she had a solid work like over the weekend on that plethora of work days on
exactly.
Saturday.
A couple of the other notes from the weekend before we reach for Safi, and by the way, later. Well, KK was supposed to be here now, but we'll get him later. Mike Welch with the workout report from the weekend and this morning. We'll catch up with John White in hour three, and I just asked John to put together an Oaks line.
Have you heard any buzz about Forever Young?
Well, just
nothing, everything good, just
yeah,
normal.
Just, yeah, okay. He's out there.
I thought I know he had that speed, like gallop or whatever on Sunday, but I mean on Saturday, but I thought that was just odd to have a work day when you really didn't have it scheduled. It didn't seem like
Japanese,
scheduled.
There's no value.
And
honestly,
you're switching the work days. You know, it was Tuesday, now it's Wednesday.
It's going to be Wednesday. But they are, I won't call them unorthodox because unless it's unorthodox by our determination, but they've got a different approach, and obviously it's paying off. I mean, right. they've cultivated it. You would think at this point,
unless Hoggy's great. He wins everywhere. I mean, he's got like greater group one wins in like six countries, including America. So he knows what the heck he's doing with this horse. And the horse apparently did not ship it well at all to Saudi Arabia, and they were really worried that he could show up with his best effort, and they got the most out of him in that race, overcoming a slow start. So yeah, if anybody's gonna, I'm not saying, I'm just like, to me, like any slight hiccup or perceived hiccup, it could be a concern. But, there's still plenty of time that, heck, at this point in 83, I think Lily T was sick, and he still winds up winning the Derby.
Wow, that's special because.
Or 93, or, yeah.
I mean, you. 93 was Sea Hero.
Yeah, 83. So. Yeah, it was 83, right?
No,
it was 92.
92 sounds right.
It was Azari's year. Azari was the 91 Juvenile, and then it was the Azari Derby. And, of course, AP Indy scratched on Friday.
That's right. Couple of other notes. Let me slip this in. Excuse me. In addition to Skippy's win, Informed Patriot, the Steve Asmussen won that Bathhouse Row.
Back on the right track.
And winnable, McPeak, that Valley of the Vapors with Colby Hernandez.
There were some scratches in there, but she looked good, and she won it pretty comfortable, and she's a nice filly coming off those Turfway races.
Raging Sea with a terrific effort on Friday at Keeneland.
I thought she might need a race, and she closed wide over that track to get it done. Looked real good.
Flavian Pratt for Chad. And then on Saturday in the Ben Ally, Kings Barnes, whose name came up earlier,
yet another,
along with Skippy, with horses like Skippy Longstocking. And there's even some, three-year-olds from last year that we haven't even seen yet. Angel of Empire, who's working his way back. The handicap division gets more and more appealing every week, essentially.
With every
passing race for four and ups, there's another nice addition.
What's up with Disarm? Is he's still coming?
He's
back
around. He's working. Kings Barnes wins the Ben Ally. No stopping Appleby in that Elkhorn.
Now I had Silver Knot. I picked him on the show, and I bet him. But I tried to fade Kingsbarn, so I got half right, half wrong there.
Gary Yunt, everybody, back for another Derby, and there's KK, who was the long rumored.
Yeah, when I saw Gary at Keeneland on Saturday, he said this morning's his first morning on track full time here. So yeah, he's been his first Derby proud Clarion. He was covering it for the Herald Leader. They used to the Leader Lexington Leader. They used to have an evening and a morning and evening paper, and he was working for the evening one, and he covered 1966 Derby, his first Derby. Gary Yunt, he's been here every year since.
It's amazing, and I harass him to come on. And he's impossible to nail down. He just won't. He won't visit. Some of the other action from the weekend. We got to talk about the two potential Preakness tie-ins yesterday. And I haven't reached out to Mike Campbell yet this morning, other than to congratulated him on Twitter yesterday. But the Illinois Derby Patriot Spirit. Mm-hmm. Who was really good and was absolutely dialed in for that Illinois Derby. And it has to mean a lot to Mike Campbell and to Mr. Mellon, George Mellon, Mellon Patch Racing. Julio Felix aboard, and Patriot Spirit wins the Illinois Derby. And then for those of you that did not get a chance to watch the Tessio, Copper Tax absolutely misses the break, spots the field, and comes running. And 88 buyer, and he might be just a cut beneath. The initial reaction, I think, was iffy about it. But Gary Capuano, is going to consider Copper Tax for the Preakness.
Now, so. I remember in the 70s they had one Elocutionist that like split the Bull Forbes Derby and Belmont wins, and I think he had been a Tessio winner maybe, but when's the last Tessio horse win the Preakness? I've already forgotten that piece of trivia. It's been a while.
Deputed Testimony is the easy answer, but I don't know if I'm not sure if Deputed Testimony won the Tessio. That we got to check on that.
It's a nice horse, Deputed. He's all right. Lucas.
There's
missed the Derby.
Not Lucas.
He wasn't Lucas?
No.
Boniface?
Phil Boniface.
Phil Boniface. I don't know why I said Lucas.
Actually, Ian Wilkes was very happy with the work on Saturday of Into Champagne, and she jogged good yesterday. She walked today, will gallop tomorrow. They're not 100%
really. I know I had seen him just say that, hey, he just said that he wasn't sure that a mile and an eighth was her best distance, and she could be pointed.
Interesting.
What it was initially there was a thing where he was going to take a look at the Oaks and the Eight Bells.
There you go.
And he said it right after the Gulfstream Park Oaks, and I knew I saw that and had never seen any updates, so I knew I had seen something.
No,
like that.
You were then. You were not. I sort of misinterpreted the way in which he answered. Let me get Safi because I promised them the 40, and I don't want to be.
And I'll be back late on with you this week.
Yeah, you good?
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Steve. Good to see you this morning. I'll talk to you later this
James
week.
Scully, everybody, getting it going. James_Scully111 and Sappy Joseph is going to join us, and we've already been praising Skippy Longstocking nonstop. Sappy, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. Obviously, got more than just Skippy to talk about, but let's start there. And I had an exchange with you yesterday, and I don't know if you saw my tweet. I don't understand why this horse has not got a bigger fan base, because he's building a tremendous resume.
Yeah, I mean, he's a hard trying horse. Obviously, he needs to get that grade one on his resume where he prove he could beat the top horses, but hopefully that'll come this year.
Well, talk a little bit about what has gone on so far this year. And an Oaklawn Handicap is a serious, addition to any handicap horse resume. Career best from a figure standpoint. And, he's a horse that's thrived on work. I had never noticed that. He really never has left the racetrack, has he?
No, since he's coming from the sales, he hasn't. I mean, occasionally we backed off his races and spaced him, but he's been pretty consistent. He's been a very strong horse for us.
Amazing. I you know, and here we are, and I haven't had a chance yet this morning on Matt Churchill. Haven't had a chance to even talk about the wrap-up Friday at Ocala in the sale, but this was a $37,000 purchase. You and I haven't talked about Skippy in a while. Bring us back to the acquisition.
Yeah, I mean, he was a ball back at that sale, and we went back to the barn to look at him. They brought him out, actually, to the stall, and I realized that I had the mother. I had trained his half-brother, Moonlight Strike. So we went ahead and we bought him for $37,000. I figured, exaggerated, obviously hadn't done much then, but we figured we were taking a chance in the mirror. The first pull was a good pull. He was great at stakes place plus in the Tampa Bay Derby. So we would take a chance there, and, I mean, the rest is history. He never envisioned he's going to buy a horse for $37,000, and he's going to work out to be like what he does. But that's what keeps racing going. It's his dream and the hope, and he's a perfect example of it.
Dan Alonzo, the owner, what kind of history does he have as an owner?
Yeah, we've been training for him maybe 6 months before Skippy. So Skippy was the first horse I ever bought for him, and since then we've built up quite a good relationship. I mean, we have probably maybe five or six horses for him now. They've been in the game a while. It's him and his dad. They've been in the game for quite a while. Skippy's his best horse, and he's got some offers with Skippy, on two occasions, quite substantial offers to go to the Middle East, and he turned them down. And each time he turned them down, the next race after, Skippy ran poorly. And I was like, but it's ironic. So he turned them down, he ran poorly, and then he came back and won a big one after. So it's just testament for him to keeping the horse, because it was substantial money. And I actually told him, business wise, you would almost sell it. But he said, he's never had a horse like Skippy, and the money's not gonna change him in that aspect. Where Skippy takes him everywhere. Every race Skippy runs on the road, he goes to every track. So he's enjoying it just as much, and that's what racing is about.
Well, and that's exactly right. I mean, I always, whenever that topic comes up, I always bring up Harry Aleo, the late owner from San Francisco, who had Lost in the Fog, and somebody along the way, said to him, "Mr. Aleo, you've had huge offers to sell this horse. How come you haven't sold?" And he said, "What would I do with the money but go try to find another horse like him?" So what's the point of selling? Right?
Correct. And they actually used those exact words. He said, "I'm going to sell him and then try to find a horse like him. I may never find a horse like him." So
exactly.
That's been his reason for keeping him.
Well, you look at this resume, and you mentioned the grade one. He's run three times so far this year, and the Pegasus situation is completely behind you now. How do you shop for the spot? Whitney, what kind of a grade one do you think, what's the right place for it?
Yeah, I was kind of looking through it last night, schedule wise, to see where to come up with. We'd like to get better at the Charleston Classic. It's $1 million and you want to repeat, but it's not a grade one. At least not yet. It's not going to probably be, maybe it'll be coming in a couple of years. Looking at, there's a Stephen Foster at Churchill for $1 million. That is a grade one. Then you got the Whitney, it is a grade one. So I guess that those are options to kind of consider at the moment, but nothing's really set in stone. He just got back to Florida this morning. We'll give him a week or so before we come up with a plan, kind of Denver set it on a stone. But those will probably be the two options. Is Stephen Foster, timing-wise, to know from the race from the Oakland handicap to the Stephen Foster makes a lot of sense. So. Yeah. It's not set, but that's something we'll consider.
Something occurs to me just looking at the breeding. Zigzagerator, a son of Curlin, out of a War Chant mare, and of course War Chant just passing in the last 10 days. Have you thought turf at all with him at any point?
Yeah, if you look at his pedigree, you would almost think turf, but it's hard to change it. And there was a couple of thoughts early on. Speaking with owners that try to turf, but I told him at that time, I mean, he's in such good order. Why are we going to experiment with the surface? I mean, he's running well on the dirt. Why would we change it? But you almost get that thought, but I don't think it's going to change if he keeps running like how he's running. I mean,
the one thought about it is, I think you look at a horse like Motown, who got his grade one in the Hollywood Derby. And that's just in the back of my head that maybe there's maybe the grade one, you get it that way.
Yeah, I would say if we were to try turf, that he would have to get thrown like a clunker again, and that Danville would consider it. The time would have to be right. I mean,
I hear you.
It's kind of hard to go experimenting on the turf off of these kind of races, and then you run bad and you have an easy excuse. Oh, it's the turf. I mean, I think making easy excuses is the worst thing to do in this game if you're going to have success.
Well, the success has been consistent for Skippy Longstocking, who just, won, let's see, West Virginia Derby, Harlan's Holiday, the Challenger twice. Now with this, you mentioned the Charlestown Classic, six graded stake wins, two grade one placements, and one of the most consistent horses in recent years, and he deserves way more appreciation from certainly players. I think appreciate him because when he wins, he very frequently wins at a nice price.
Yeah, I mean he does, and I think his name kind of gets a lot of attraction too. People enjoy his name. Even when he went to the Preakness, he didn't win. He was getting a lot of attention, but I think he just needs to keep on winning and keep doing well and being as consistent as he is. And slowly but surely, you do gain fans once you prove it over and over, and that's what he's doing. I mean, for him to rebound after the Pegasus this year, I mean, that was a very low moment. A lot of thoughts go through your head. You wonder if something's wrong, and then once everything checked up, the Challenger at Tampa, that was a rebuilding race, and it got us back on track. But still, you need to see him jump back up like what he did in Oakland, and Oakland kind of put us where we get. We know we're back on the right path.
You know, I should ask too before we talk about Catalytic. You brought County Final, and he basically assured a solid pace, but it wasn't like he ran off and I thought some people said, oh, you know, County Final's there, to assure a pace, but. I mean, Skippy was sitting second, so it's not as if he was in there as a rabbit.
No, he went there on his own right. I mean, he's a horse that we claimed actually from a 5-furlong dirt race, and we stretched him out. He won well at Kentucky Downs this year with his 101 bar, and he's done well in the Tapita going two turns. So he's never went two turns on a dirt. I don't know if we wanted to give it a try, and he was coming off a turf race where he didn't run well, so. Now was the time to try the dirt going to turns. I mean, I thought he ran okay, and I don't think it's his best. So we learned through trial error, and we'll cut him back and kind of try to get back to Kentucky Downs. But he went there on his own right to run his own race, basically.
Nice. Let's turn our attention. I'm here at Churchill, and you're ticketed with Catalytic. I had a wonderful conversation with Tammy Bobo and Julie Davies about his origins, Safi, and it's a great story in the making.
Yeah, I mean, he's all my Tammy Bobo, Julie Davies, and George Isaac. So he's a horse that he didn't sell in a June sale, and they scratched him because they didn't think they were going to get what they wanted. And thankfully, they sent him to us, and he won first time out nicely. After that, he had setback. He got sick, and he missed some time, and we were kind of, you wouldn't even think we were going to make the Derby because we were so far behind. We ran him in an allowance race that if he ran well, we would take a chance. We'd get a race into him. And at Tampa, everything went wrong in the allowance race. He acted up in the gate. He was restless. He missed the break. It looked like he was going to run a distant fourth, and then he flew and just got beat. After that, the owners, we talked it over, and they said, you know what, run him in the Florida Derby. It was only back in 3 weeks, and it was a tall task, but they said they'd rather take a chance at home without having to ship him again. And he distanced second behind Fierceness, but he kept on well in his own right with some good horses behind him. So he earned his shot in the Derby, basically, and from there we keep dreaming.
Well, and give us the plan, the shipping and how you're going to handle everything. And are you locked in with Julian, or what's the latest on the jock situation?
Yeah, the jock situation, I think we decided we're going to move Jose Ortiz to ride him in the Derby.
Very nice. I was waiting for Jose to for that shoe to fall. So Jose Ortiz gets the call on Catalytic. And you're coming here when? He's got what, one more work down there?
Yeah, no, he worked. He worked on Friday at Gulfstream because you have to be there at Derby Saturday and
right.
The new rules. So he actually arrived this morning at 7 a.m.
Oh, good. Okay, didn't even realize. Excellent. So he's here.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Zaffy, obviously, you've got we got one. You know, we got one. One elephant in the room. Last spring's circumstances that were so. You know, sad, frustrating, upsetting, challenging. I mean, talk about coming back here and you know, thoughts in the aftermath of last year's difficulties.
Yeah, I mean, last year, obviously, you wouldn't wish it on anybody, and then the way it was handled and how I was portrayed, it wasn't the right way that I was portrayed and made to look out like. But you know what? God is good, and the truth prevailed in the end, and here we are back. He's sending us back with a Derby horse again. So you can't make it up. And he just thankful for all the blessings that he shares upon us. I mean, we never missed a beat after last year. Our barns continue strong. And as I said, here we are. We have to go through the trials and adversity, but we come out stronger. You learn a lot about life during that time. And I wouldn't want to ever be in that position again. But I wouldn't change it. And I think it's a chapter in my life that it taught me a lot more about just everything about life in general.
Is there anything you felt compelled to change in terms of the operation and any, you know, any controls and anything, you know, with your vet staff, any elements that, affected how you operated going forward?
No, I as I said, we were clear to anything,
and right.
It had nothing to do with us. Most definitely, so that was, it had nothing to do with us, and it may have more to the story down the line, but that's going to be addressed at a different time. I mean, one of the horses had levels of rat poison in it. They said it wasn't enough, but that's what they said. They also held our results for 6 weeks after when the results were revealed and that was told us. So as I said, things weren't done correctly on their part a lot, but we moved forward in life. The truth prevailed, as I said, and hey, we can sit here and point fingers and blame everybody and blame them. But what's that going to accomplish?
No.
All we can do is go forward, try to do better and make sure that this doesn't happen to somebody else down the line. I think that's the biggest change that I want to make, is that make sure someone's not treated like that down the line again.
Let me give us an update, too, about Lord Miles.
Yeah, he came back the other day in the 7-furlong race. Probably short, but we needed to get him back started. I mean, there's so much you could do. You got to get him back started. Ideally, you would want to start him back in a one-turn mile, but to wait, there was no race in the book, and to wait another 6-7 weeks didn't make sense, so. He ran very, if anything you say, lackluster. But I think that race will bring him on, and we'll hopefully stretch him on next time, two turns again.
Got to ask you about the Jerry Dilger namesake. Dilger, third last week in the Lexington for Mike Ryan, and feels like he's a horse that still has, you know, more upside yet.
Yeah, he is. He's a homebred for Mike Ryan, obviously. Jerry Dilger was his great partner and friend, and he named it in tribute to him. So it was nice to see him run third. I think we're going to cut him back to one turn. I feel that's going to be like his best, like a comfortable being sprinter, maybe 6.5, 7. I think that's going to, he's going to end up being best at going that distance.
Nice. And since we're talking namesakes, you've also, in addition to Mike Ryan, you've also got one of my absolute favorites. Talk about Axelm and what's going on with him.
Yeah, he ran third the other day in Alamas at Keeneland in a 3X. He kind of using that as a prep for Churchill. He kind of ran kind of indifferent. He broke well, kind of dropped back, looked like he was going to run seventh, and then he stayed on again, non-treaded in third. Jose thought that he didn't really know him, and he said, I kind of eased up on a little bit, and he dropped back like he didn't have any run. And then I got into him again, and he finished up well. So we're hoping to run him on Derby Day in the big sprinter. And I think he'll go there with us as a live outsider.
Very nice. Of course, Ed Seltzer and Bev, one of my favorite people in the game, Ed Seltzer. And this is one of his homebreds named for Pete Axthelm. So it'll be good to see them here. And finally, let's just glance at this week, see if we can't find a live horse to cash at either Gulfstream or maybe at Keeneland. I'm looking, you don't have any maiden specials. How about, let's see, Wednesday. What? Who's live here, Safi? Mainline Cypher comes up on Thursday at Keeneland.
Yeah, Mainline Cypher in that spot. Keeneland, he should have a very good chance. So he'll be tough in that spot.
You got Cap Ferret at Gulfstream as well on Friday.
Yeah, she's a first-timer, just trains average. Kind of want to get a race into her to see where we're at, basically. Let us know where to go.
Who else are you bringing here for Oaks Derby weekend? Any other?
We have quite a bit still going to come there. We got Abramar in the three-year-old turf race. Spirit Wind's probably going to go to the grade one. Seven for long race with fillies there. R. Harper Rose to the eight bells.
Nice.
And then like a few other horses to some other races around that week too also.
Outstanding. Well, then one familiar sight during the lead up will be Safi and his dad, who I met. if I see you, there's your dad. So yeah. You guys are an entry.
Yeah, for sure. We do a lot of things together, and it's great to have that. We butt heads all the time, but we always try to come up with the right decision for the horse. So I'm happy to have. Obviously, I learned from him, and it's a great pleasure to be living his dream for him also, because this is something that he probably wanted to do, but he had to work in Barbados, and over there it's more of a pleasure to train horses, a pleasure hobby. So I think I get to live his dream for him in his older ages, and thank God he's here with me to experience it, and we could do it together.
Well, you're doing very well together. You blew through 1,000 wins already this year, and way more to come. Skippy Longstocking wins the Oaklawn Handicap, the Catalytic in the Derby, a handful of other stake tries coming up next weekend. Safi, well done. We'll see you here and talk soon.
Thank you very much, Steve. Take care.
I appreciate it. Safi Joseph, everybody, and was very professional and honestly gracious about what transpired here last year with the two horses that suffered cardiac incidents and helped really kind of create a firestorm that. Just the atmosphere that you get. A couple of notes, just hearing from Brian Bouye from the Hall of Fame, a reminder, tomorrow will be the release and 11 o'clock tomorrow. And Brian will join us minutes after the Hall of Fame announcement goes out. And quite a nice group. And the anticipation, of course, that it's going to be hard to keep. It's going to be very hard to keep a lot of these out. You look at this Clement, McLaughlin, Motion, O'Neill, Sadler, and Sheriffs on the training side. Then Georgie Chavez and Joel Rosario are the jocks. Blind Luck, I think she's a Hall of Famer. Game On Dude on the ballot, of course. Again, Gio Ponti and Gunrunner. You would think that Gunrunner is going to make it. Hop de Grasse is back again. Justify, the assumption is that first ballot Hall of Famer himself. Kona Gold, who should have been elected God knows how many years ago. Lady Eli as well, who is a tough call. Rags to Riches, we've had this discussion many times. She did something unique. I personally, for me, doesn't have the complete resume for a Hall of Famer, but we'll see. We'll see where it goes. So tomorrow, a little after 11, you can look forward to that announcement. And we always, it's always Derby week. And here they are, and Rich Migliori joining us. Rich.
Steve, how are you?
I'm good, and I've got to start with hockey because I watched a good portion of the Rangers game yesterday, but I didn't see how it ended.
Well, we won 4-1. It was, yeah, they took care of business. They were supposed to beat the Capitals. They did. I hope that we can get this done in 4 or 5 games instead of going 7, because I think that shows up on teams later when every single series is a war and it goes the distance. And the coolest thing yesterday was, you know, Matt Rempe is becoming somewhat of a, you know, folk hero here in New York, right? He's like a big gangly kid that is tough. He's 6'8". So what does that make him on skates, right? And he scored a goal. So he's not just a goon. You know, he scored our first goal. And every time I've been to the Garden, which unfortunately I was working yesterday, I couldn't be there. As soon as his skates touch the ice, the Garden, it's like the Colosseum in Rome, is like, Rempe. He creates a great deal of excitement.
I love it. I did watch the Florida game, the Florida Tampa game, which was really quite good. And
they're two terrific teams, yeah. Really good teams, yeah.
And boy, Tampa had every chance in the third period to tie that up, and then the Florida got an empty net late. I was thinking of Richard Kent. It was a huge took me to a Tampa game when we were down at Ocala for the sale. And then I started to watch the Ranger game, and then I watched a little bit into the second period. It was still scoreless, but I was thinking of you. So,
well, thank you. And I also had to pipe it into the paddock office because I was reporting yesterday on the show. So in between my hits, I was ducking in and, you know, watching the game. And then my good friend, Jesse Iglesias, he actually won a race the other day with Tetsu. He always texts me, you know, results. He knows when I'm working. So I'm like, you know, I stay on top of it. And then I stayed in my office for the third period. I was done. And I said, I'm just going to stay here and watch this and enjoy it. My fervent wish, Steve, I just want the season to go as long as possible, which means we get to the finals. So
exactly. Well, at least you've got a season to enjoy, a second season, because as a Sabre fan, they flirted late in the season with maybe making the playoffs, but it is rough. I'll tell you, it's frustrating. Let me dive in, and because I know you got know you're tight today. I instead of talking about the America's Day at the Races shows and the Oaklawn and New York racing, I'm actually going to go to Illinois and yesterday's Patriot Spirit win in the Illinois Derby, because it gives me a chance to have you talk about Bolshoi Boy.
Oh, wow. Man, you're bringing up a blast from the past. Yeah, Bolshoi Boy was a really nice little horse. Howie Tescher trained him. I went to ride him in the Illinois Derby at Sportsman's, and it was sloppy and just pouring down rain. It was as nasty a day as you can, you know, have. And the first race, I went out on that day, like a balcony, to watch the first race from the balcony off the jocks room, and somebody slipped into the first turn and like lost their footing and went down. And I said, man, I know one thing about my horse. He wasn't like a natural speed horse, but I know he's sure footed. I jacked him out of there. I put him, well, I was up on the pace. I was heading head for the lead. I said, at least no one's going to fall down in front of me. And he went gate to wire. He was a nice horse, Steve. He was like a cut below like the upper echelon of that 3-year-old crop, but you know, he was beaten a neck by Broad Brush in the Ohio Derby. Broad Brush made the lead with Gary Stevens and pulled up, and Bolshoi Boy roared back, took the lead, and Broad Brush spotted him. And if anybody's never seen the chicken flamingo buck passer when they wouldn't take betting and it was like a 12 horse field, buck passer pulled up, Abe's Holt blew by him, Buck Passer looked up and said, "Oh, I got more work to do," and went and caught him. It was impossible. Broad Brush did the same thing that day in the Ohio Derby. Then he was second to Bold Arrangement in the Bluegrass, but he did win the Illinois Derby, which was great.
Well, and there is something very funny about that run of races where you rode him during, you know, the best three-year-old, essentially the best part of the year in the prep season, and then into the, you know, subsequent races. He finished second three times and wins the Illinois Derby. But what's funny is all the B horses that were involved. Badgerland beat you at Hialeah, then Bachelor Bow in the Bluegrass. You win the Illinois Derby, and then it is opening day at Thistledown, and you went to Thistledown, and you were second to Broad Brush in the Ohio Derby.
Yeah, they're right. There were a lot of those BB horses. And actually, so Bold Arrangement was third in that Bluegrass then, right?
It was
Bachelor won it with Larry Melanson. Yes. Yeah. Okay. See how your memory, you get older, things rearrange in your mind a little bit. But he was a really nice horse to ride, though, Steve. Even though he had all those seconds, it wasn't that he didn't want to win. It was he gave his all. I mean, he was an overachiever. He ran so hard. And when I went to ride him against Badgerland in the Flamingo, I won the undercard. It might have been the Bougainvillea, one of those races for Al Goldberg. And I got back to LaGuardia that night, and somebody had broken my window and ripped my radio out of the dashboard. Oh, In the parking lot at LaGuardia, and so it was really cold back in New York, right? Middle of winter. I had to drive home with no window, freezing. And I'm like, well, it was a good day until this happened. But yeah, but no, he was cool. I was riding a lot for Howie at that point. He had a really nice horse for Joe Allen called Easton, a filly for Rhonda Allen. Joe was married to Rhonda at the time, named Make the Magic. And she had a habit of really bearing out, and I worked her on the Oklahoma turf course, and, you know, it was tough to get her around there. And I told, like, all my friends in the jockey's room, Harry Rice, I said, if this filly makes the first turn, she won't get beat. And we barely made the first turn, and she won easy. I think I won three in a row on her, and it was fun riding for Howie back then.
Howie Tesher, who we lost in the last, 8-9 months ago now, probably. One of the real gentlemen and characters that you can't get enough of. So I when I watched the Illinois Derby yesterday, and I went and I wanted to look, there was somebody wearing a Sportsman's Park coat that got a bunch of pictures on Twitter. He was a big hit yesterday, wearing an old Sportsman's Illinois Derby jacket. And so I went and looked. I wanted to go look at the Illinois Derby, which is a very funny race. It has been interrupted in its, you know, in its history many times. It's had not just this recent blackout of 7 or 8 years, but there was going back in the 20s, 30s, there was a period where it wasn't being run. There's been several occasions where it's been on hiatus, but now it's it feels like it's back, and with the potential for the carries at Hawthorne. Jim Miller told us in Vegas that they'll be going forward with their construction on the gaming hall. So the Illinois Derby is back, and I knew I wasn't going to miss a chance to talk to you about Bolshoi Boy. Rich, the other action, of course, you guys were watching. I just had Safi Joseph on. We talked about Skippy Longstocking, and I watched a fair amount of the show yesterday too with Rajiv over there. Rajiv visiting Hot Springs and Lafitte, and with Paul. I talked to Paul on Friday for the weekend preview, and Saturday's action. Skippy Longstocking, what a game horse this has turned into, and 5-year-old, 6 graded stake wins, and $2 million in earnings, a $37,000 purchase.
Well, how'd you like telling him, Steve?
Unbelievable.
It'd be pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole crew down at Oakland has done amazing work. And Matt Maggie's been in there a bunch of weekends with them. Lafitte, you know, he's just awesome. And then Paul, you know, I love the guy. And Rajiv is, honestly, he's got something you can't teach. He's going to be great at TV because he's just so comfortable and relaxed. And then everything else is just getting your reps in. The more you do it, the more you improve at it. And that he's already got that comfortability that you can't teach. I think he's a great addition to our team. And, but yeah, Pippi Longstocking is just one of those hickory, almost like a throwback kind of horse, right? That takes his show on the road and shows up every time.
That he's run at 12 or 13 racetracks, and what amazed me, you know, for a horse that's made as many starts as he has annually, 5 at 2, 9 at 3, 6 at 4, and already 3, you know, by mid-April. As a five-year-old, he's never, I said this to Safi, he's never left the racetrack. He's never been kicked out for any, I mean, he's one of these horses that thrives on work.
Well, and there's a lot of horses that do thrive on work, and you know, not to hear people that aren't informed or within our industry hear it, you know, they're better served just sitting out in a paddock under a cork tree like Ferdinand the Bull. Nothing further from the truth. There are, you know, even yesterday, the filly that Mandela won the stake with, Coffee in Bed, you read his quotes about that when the training was closed because of weather, she would tie up. She needs to go out and do something and train and not let her mind work on her. There are a lot of horses that thrive on work, and now, in this day and age, you're not seeing horses run as often. You're not seeing horses train as often. And I'm not saying you can't generalize in any of these things, right? There's no cookie cutter way to do this. But sometimes horses will fall through the cracks that would be better served if they ran more often or worked harder than, you know, oh, we work once a week, we run once a month. Some horses enjoy and thrive on the workload.
100%. And in fact, this came up. I should pull out my. I've got my. I forget who it was in the last couple of weeks. We were talking about. I know who it was. This goes back to Senior Buscador, and keeping horses running, running them instead of, you know, working them 7 times, and you know, going ahead and, you know, put them in, run them when they're right. And
well, exactly, run them when they're right, give them breaks when they're a little tired or beat up. And, you know, it's so funny because, you know, so many names get recycled over the years. And I was talking with Bruce Levine the other day. There was a horse in that Bruce Brown trains named Good Our Reward. Well, Bruce rubbed a horse named Our Reward for John Campo many years ago, and then we got to talking about that. And that same horse, who was owned by Sam Lefrak, would come to Lakeview Farms, Bill George's farm, after racing for 4, 5, 6 months, and he'd come back to the farm, and I was his groom on the farm. Bruce was his groom at the track. And I would take care of him, and he would get, you know, healthy again. He'd put on weight. His coat would come back. He, you know, any of his little, you know, aches and pains would go away after, you know, 2 months, and he'd head back to the track, and we'd see him again in 5 or 6 months. And, you know, those throwback kind of horses that when they're good, you run them. When they're not, back off, give them a little chance to recover, let Mother Nature do her thing. And but I just, it's so ironic that you said it like that, because that's what me and Bruce were talking about. That, and it turns out we both groomed the same horse, just at different locales.
That's funny. That is funny.
Yeah. So, hey, did you you know Sam Lefrak at all?
No. I mean, I know Lefrak City, and because my dad's business. Yeah, my dad is a builder. I mean, I know of him.
Yeah, I mean, he had, you know, real estate developer and had, you know, those buildings and stuff. And his son actually carried on for a while after him. But yeah, he would come out every once in a while too when our reward was at the farm, and it was always like a big deal because he was a very generous guy. And you know, I learned early on working for Dr. Hemphill. Mike Daggett was assistant trainer to Walter Kelly, and he actually owned horses in partnership with Walter as the assistant, a horse named Sin Solari, and there was another one. And you'd be at the farm and you'd see Mike coming up the drive, and I'd grab like, you know, fly spray and a rub rag, and I'd go down there and I'd be spraying the fly, you know, spray and wiping the horse down, and he'd always give you $5. So anytime you saw him coming, you grabbed your stuff, ran down to the horse. And when you're making $5 a day, a guy's tipping you $5. It's pretty good dough.
I love it. That's
he must. He had to know because what? The only thing I did all day was wipe this horse down.
That is funny. That is great. Rich, we got back to turf racing over the weekend, and always a welcome sign. That nothing is for New York horse players. Nothing better than Friday and getting back on the grass.
Yeah, it just even when the tarps came off and everything, all of a sudden get you that brilliant green, and the tarps have been such a smart addition by Glenn Kozak, because the grass is already lush and full and it looks great. And, you know, you get bigger fields, and some of the riding on the turf has been terrific. Manny Franco and Jose Lascano rode incredible the first 2 days of the turf. I mean, they put horses in every right position, saving ground, patient, you know, thoughtful, Jose stealing the stake yesterday, putting Rob Falcone's filly on the lead and walking the dog. I mean, it's fun to watch top riders ride the turf because you can win on second, third, fourth best horse if you ride the right race. And not that they weren't riding good horses. I'm not disparaging the horses in any way, shape, or form, but I enjoy watching their thought process. You could see that they're going in with a plan and thinking it through. They're playing chess when some of the other guys are still playing checkers.
Ha. I saw you. In fact, I saw you with Manny.
When you won him the first time or for Chad, Kingman. Yeah.
Yeah.
He just cruised up, saved ground in behind him. And you could see the confidence that Manny has. It's not like he's concerned. Oh, am I going to get trapped in here? I got a lot of horse. Didn't bat an eye. Didn't blink. I'm staying in here and the hole will present itself. And it, of course it did.
Yeah. Huh. The other stake came on.
Marvelous Maud, the Danger's Hour, the one on Saturday.
Yeah, Spirit of St. Louis.
Oh, Spirit of St. Louis. What am I thinking? I'm thinking Marvelous Maud was in the other stake. The Plenty of Grace. Yeah, no, I mean, that's the first time that horse stepped out of New York Bred Company.
Right.
And man, he's got to turn a foot. He inhaled that field the last eighth of a mile. That was, I think, another level performance for that horse. I think he's going to be a player in New York this year in open company stakes.
Well, and you mentioned the Falcone win yesterday, Spirit and Glory. It's funny, that short field, and he ended up getting a, you know, what, 5-1, I think, as a price, which was generous. And that was the only way that horse was winning.
No, absolutely. You know, and that's a mare that had a lot of trouble early in her career getting out of the gate. And it just seems like now that I think she's five, she figured it out and she leaves the gate with the field now. And Jose Lascano saw an opportunity and pounced on it, took advantage of it. You know, when I interviewed Rob after the race, he was like, you know, we wanted to be close, didn't really expect to be on the lead, but Jose, you know, called that audible. And that's something that I wish all trainers would understand. You know, everybody should go in on the same page. This is how we'd like to approach it. But then let the rider react to the moment. If you inhibit a rider too much, the by the time they decide to react to that moment, the moment is gone. You free them up. Hey, like, you know, I would love to see you be here, but, you know, good luck. Use your judgment and let riders react. You know, Tom Brady didn't go to the line of scrimmage and see a certain defense and go, well, I can't, you know, call an audible because I'll get in trouble, you know, and then he gets sacked. You got to be able to be free, unencumbered, and trainers and owners will get so much more out of riders if they allow them that.
Yeah, well framed. The pictures, Rich, that you got that those evening walks around Belmont, and the images are starting to get. I don't know. I this is going to be a slow process, and it's a little agonizing. I suppose it's at least slightly a better scenario than watching Arlington come down, because we knew there wasn't anything that was going to replace it. At least here we know there's going to be a spectacular new Belmont in its wake. But watching Dave Grenning put up that steam shovel pulling down the roof, and it's tough to watch.
It is the all the front seating on the you know, clubhouse and grandstand side is already down. Obviously the frame of the building's still up, but the seats are all gone. And then there's, you know, obviously huge piles of dirt and tapeta, and you know it looks like chaos. I when I was walking last night after the hockey game. I stayed down here last night. I had stuff to do here in the morning, and ran into Glenn Kozak walking his dogs, and we got to talking, and he was explaining it. It seems like everything's under control and it's going along fine. And he was telling me what was already done and what he expects to be done over the next, you know, few weeks. And, I don't have an eye for that stuff. I can't see it. I am excited about a new Belmont. Of course, it is bittersweet because, you know, that building holds a lot of incredible memories, you know, for all of us, whether you're a player, whether you're a participant, a fan. It's a building with a lot of history, and, you know, all of us have had our moments there. The only thing I was hoping that they would get rid of, and they saved it, was that mural on the second floor in the clubhouse of the Pep. Because he made me look like I'm 96 years old.
Well, it's hysterical. It's crazy that you bring up the mural, because at 11:30, Remy Bellek is going to stop by. He is putting the finishing touches on the additional characters that were added to the Derby murals by his father, who's now 97, I believe.
Wow.
And you know, is 100%. It's a little tough for him to travel. His wheels wheels are not what they used to be. But
sure.
But he did the sketches, and Remy is painting them in.
What a cool collaboration, you know, father and son. That's really neat.
And I say this, you said about making you look old. They added Bill Mott to the trainer side, and I mean, Barkley looks younger. It's Bill is not going to be happy, I don't think, when he sees it.
Well, you're making me feel better because I'm keeping good company.
And in fact, Darren Rodgers, I showed a picture of it to Darren Rodgers, and Darren said, "Ooh, maybe if they could just yellow his hair up a little bit, and that might be all it takes." But because he did it, you know, Bill's hair is not that gray. It's sort of that golden tintish gray, but it's very funny. There's also the Doug O'Neill is in there, and there's always a few elements of those characters that make you laugh. I mean, one of the hallmarks of the Peb style is, you know, exaggerated features.
Yes, yeah, no doubt. I mean, listen, I know I have a prominent nose. It's a bit more prominent because of Peb, but my favorite Peb story for me, a personal story, is that the first time I was ever leading rider, I was 16 years old, Aqueduct spring meeting. My agent was Joe Shea, who had been Ron Turcotte's agent his entire career. And I was leading rider by like 20 winners. So it was a foregone conclusion. And he told me after the races Monday, I'm going to come by the guy. I still live at Steve's barn. I'm going to come by and pick you up and bring you to my house in Elmont for dinner. And, you know, to celebrate your first time being a leading rider. And I have a surprise for you. So he picked me up, went to the house. His wife, Marcia, made a beautiful dinner. And Ron Turcotte was there, you know, and Ron was, you know, by then in a wheelchair. But here I am, 16 years old, sitting with Ron Turcotte and the guy who rode Secretariat and all these great horses. And after the dinner, he and Joe presented me with the original Peb of myself. And like when Peb drew you, it was like, wow, you made it. It was a big deal to have Peb draw you. And on the back, you know, Ron, you know, signed it and said, you know, to Richard, fine young man, first of many leading rider titles. Like it's still a cherished, you know, possession that I have, that Ron and Joe gave to me. And it's like an amazing gift.
And there is not a horseman of any variety that doesn't have their framed Peb. I mean, any home I've ever been in, Gary, you know, Gary's got his Peb drawing. It's one of those things. And I always, whenever I see one, whenever I can do like a screen capture off of a, like a you know, I go to pull up a, you know, a digital version of a racing form or whatever, and I've captured a few, including Tony Black. Tony was on the cover. I've actually got the hard copy of this. Tony is on the cover when he had his 9 wins.
Wow!
I've got that screen captured. There's a couple. I've got the one of Shug, which I every so often when Shug is on the show, I'll put up his Peb as a, with the show listing. They're really great. And then, I've got Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup hard copies. I mean, I got stacks of them at home. You know, and of course they all have got the Peb. The Peb drawing on the cover, they've been made into posters in some cases. And
there's a poster on the second floor at Aqueduct, and I love it. I've taken pictures of it. I've actually sent it to Stephen tomorrow. His dad, Mr. DeMauro, holding Wajima and Dearly Precious in the Peb. Because it was his two champions in the same year when he won the Eclipse Award. I guess it was 75. And it's prominently displayed at Aqueduct. And every time I walk by it, it makes me think of, you know, Mr. DeMauro and, you know, just how much he meant to me and my life. But it's a wonderful Peb. It really captures the two horses and him. I love that one.
I love it. Well, Rich, I know you got a tight morning. I'll let you go. And next week when we talk, we'll get your Derby thoughts.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm running around today because it's Luciano's birthday.
Nice.
And the tradition is whenever it's anybody's birthday, I cook whatever they want. So I got to run around and get all my ingredients and start dinner when I get back. So have a great day.
Rich Migliori, everybody. And always fabulous. Mig 4450 on your Twitter. And when I get to the end of segments, I got to catch up on 7 texts. We'll look forward to Richie's thoughts when we get him next week. Mike Welch is on his way here. We'll talk to Mike in about 15. All right, John White is going to provide us with his Oaks numbers. We'll get KK. We'll get KK. K, you ready now? I can take the now, actually. Yeah? All right. Yes? Yeah? You all right? 10 minutes. All right? We'll get Kevin Kirstein after the break here as we step away. John White, Remy Belloc. Did you see them? See him working on the drawing?
That's we just walked up there. I had to see what Florent looked like. I've been giving him grief about how, you know, what he's going to look like as a cartoon figure. He looked good.
Well, there's a couple that might not be as happy with their rendering.
Hey, it's a cartoon.
Exactly. Plenty to continue on with. We'll get the latest updates, including all this movement, particularly on the Oak side. And as broken earlier this morning, Safi Joseph letting it be known, Jose Ortiz getting catalytic.
Hey, he's red hot. Can't stop him at Keeneland right now. Why not?
There you go. So we'll look forward to KK's first live Derby update when we come back. Plus, we'll get maybe any new regional dining tips, perhaps. All right. Kevin Kirstein joins us next. Stay with us. Second half, Monday at the races.